back to Bisexual Killjoy, the place where we know bisexuality isn't a phase, it's a phenomenon. I'm Bailey, and this is
Lynn.
In our last installment, we talked about bi-plus invisibility and bi-erasure and their impact. In today's episode, Bisexuality Needs Better PR, we'll dive into the deep end of bi-plus visibility because we, as bisexuals, want to be more than just visible. We want to be recognized. But before we take that plunge, Lynn, what was your bisexual killjoy moment this week?
You know, I was thinking about this question for like a while, and coming up with a specific story was driving me up a wall because it's like, man, you know, you call out the whole bisexuality thing so often that it's like, ah, which one? And I think the one that speaks to me the most right now is that a few weeks ago, I was co-teaching this class, Intro to LGBT Studies. I want to say like a few days, if not the day right after that I gave a lecture on bisexuality and bisexual erasure, my professor was speaking about the impact and the role that lesbian women had to play in caring for people during the HIV/AIDS crisis. And as I'm hearing them talk about it, I'm waiting, like I'm just waiting for them to say bisexual people too, because we were there. And it just doesn't come. It just doesn't arrive. So they stop talking. Mm-hmm. And when they come up to me in the front of the classroom, because the students are now working on their worksheets and whatever, I stare at them and kind of go, "Am bisexual."
Yeah.
"Am bisexual women. We were there." And they were actually pretty chill about it. They were like, you know, "Thank you for correcting me." But the students didn't get to hear that correction and they didn't get to hear that feedback. So sometimes that kind of sticks with me of like, yeah, I called it out, but should I have called it out a little more?
You know, I think that is a good bisexual killjoy moment and just proof to the point that when you correct people, you don't have to be loud in order to get your point across. And not every moment is going to be this big moment in the classroom that the professor's like, "Oh, you're right. You're right. Everybody, I was wrong." Because sometimes it's just that person-to-person influence that's going to make a longer-term impact. Because maybe in the future, like a teacher would remember that moment and remember bisexuals. Unfortunately, you're telling this story. I'm thinking about a moment I had in a similar grad school level LGBTQ plus class in which we're talking about the HIV/AIDS crisis and how, oh, gay men were dying by the thousands. And yes, that is true. But bisexual men were also dying by the thousands, and bisexual women were taking care of things. And bisexuals were a big part of the coalition that were caring for the community. And I feel like bisexuals in general are just kind of erased from our history, despite our huge influence in it. And this is something that we talk a lot about in activist groups, in bisexual, bi-plus activist groups. Like I'm in bi-plus US organizing, and we're trying to, you know, push a political agenda that allows bisexuality to be more recognized on a political scale. So like a couple of years ago, they went to the White House to talk about bisexual health statistics and why bisexuals need more money to get things done, because we represent a giant portion, the majority of the LGBTQ plus population, and we receive the fewest funds. So something, you know, we talk about is visibility. We talk about visibility again and again and again in activist spaces and social spaces. But at some point, I don't want to just talk about visibility anymore. I know that I exist. You know that you exist.
Yeah.
I want to be recognized. I want to get what I need from the community so that I can live a healthy, happy life. And at the end of the day, I kind of wonder, does bisexuality need a PR firm to handle all of these questions we have?
Well, I'm here to make the argument that I am from PR. I am Puerto Rican. So I think that's all the PR we need. Like, I think we're good. I feel qualified to talk about how we need to move beyond visibility. It's a 2024. It's time for recognition.
And for those listeners who missed out on last week's episode, since we're talking about visibility again today and something I imagine we'll talk about going forward, would you mind to quickly define what bisexual invisibility is?
Of course. So bisexual invisibility is the dismissal of bisexuality as a concept, category, identity, or even an idea. It's silent in that it's not necessarily about some sort of overt dismissal or rejection of what bisexuality is, but rather bisexual invisibility is the failure to consider bisexuality as a legitimate option.
So in preparation for this episode, we talked about this week how bisexuality is this third category, right? That is so uncomfortable for people who identify as monosexual to the point that they ignore us completely as though that's going to make us go away. Like if you don't talk about bisexuals, you don't say their name three times, then they won't appear in the mirror. And I feel like we started to get into that a little bit more in last week's episode, but didn't get a chance to unpack what it means to exist in an intermediate category, or as you called it in our group chat, a liminal space. And I know liminal spaces are having like a moment with Gen Z and Gen Alpha because they're creepy and abandoned and they're this threshold. But I know you're talking about liminal space in the Latin sense, you know, liminal coming from the Latin word limen or limen, which means threshold. And a liminal space is the time between what was and what is next. But what does that mean for bisexuals?
You know, I hear you describe liminal and it makes me think, darn, do I really speak in all of these really big words all the time?
You do. You absolutely do.
But yes, bisexuality is liminal. I find that it's because of that profound ambiguity in the in-between and that fluidity that makes bisexuality, it makes people fundamentally uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's a deep in their core thing. They might not be able to articulate what it is about bisexuality that makes them uncomfortable, but it is that mix, that in-between, that moving beyond and approaching something. Now, I'm no stranger to the liminal space as a Puerto Rican person who left the archipelago out of a need to survive and out of a need to advance. Growing up in PR meant that I was a United States citizen, but I couldn't vote for the next president. Mm-hmm. It meant that I was affiliated with the U.S., but I had a different native language. It meant that I felt like I was from my own country with its own pride and history, and yet somehow not at all. Invisibility shrouds the experience that can only be found in places that are both and neither. Because of that, I have found that the most palatable way to understand bisexuality and to summon bisexual activism is grounding ourselves in other categories we know as stable.
So I want to know more about what you mean. Could you speak more to that?
Yeah. Like, I think because bisexuality makes a lot of people uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. Then in order to come to terms or in order to talk about it, we ground ourselves in other categories that are easily identifiable. Think about it. We're all people. We're all complex. We're all multifaceted. Like, yes, I'm bisexual. And also, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm a person of color. I'm polyamorous. Like, that's a lot to hold. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even done with the list. So the easy route is to ground ourselves in something simple. Maybe I say that I'm monogamous. Maybe I say that I'm cisgender. It's easier that way, but it doesn't mean that it's true or reflective of our profound reality. In order for bisexual activism to thrive, we absolutely need to recognize the fluidity that exists, yes, within our desire and also beyond it. And we need to embrace that same fluidity in our communities that experience liminality within and beyond their plurisexuality. We can do better. As we decenter monosexual ideals and heterosexual norms, we must recenter ourselves in what it truly means to queer our own understanding of what bisexual activism is. The core truth of the matter is that in order for our efforts to make a lasting, impactful change at a personal, institutional, or paradigmatic level, we must center our fellow plurisexual activists of color. Those who challenge our core understandings of what the world should be like and what we need to do to get there. We must recognize the liminal space that they occupy and take action to center the perspectives that are meant to expand current notions of what it means to be bisexual and what it means to be an activist.
T. But also, I think it's hilarious that you don't think you use big words because you do literally all the time, Lynn. This... I'm like sitting here, I'm muted so I can snap my fingers. I'm like, yes, I understand most of this, which is good because you were having this teaching moment, not just for our listeners, but for me as an activist, as a writer who wants to be more academically informed while being able to sort of exist in my own liminal space, right?
Yeah.
I think that a big part of being a bisexual killjoy is recognizing and calling out difficult things, which you did earlier in your bisexual killjoy moment, so that our comrades in adjacent liminal spaces, whether those spaces be queer or they be about race or they be about background, so they don't find themselves being the only ones calling out these mistakes that we see, right? And as this project continues, our project continues, we will continue delving deeper into how the intersection of race and sexuality is critical for creating our own queer liberation and what it means to be the kind of ally that prioritizes the creation of meaningful relationships instead of avoiding discomfort. Liberation is not comfortable. There is nothing comfortable about change. Any big moment of liberation in the history of the world, let alone this country, was not something that was comfortable. And so we know that those affected most deeply and dearly by invisibility, erasure, discrimination are those of us who find ourselves in the spaces between. So as we talk about liminality, which is one of my favorite new words right now, and bisexual invisibility, I want to know how these things are different from bisexual erasure.
So bisexual erasure is the cause of bisexual invisibility. They are personal and political investments in the erasure of bisexuality and bisexual people, with their exclusion from both heterosexual and LGBT spaces. Bi erasure is composed of various strategies that we named last time that aim to erase bisexuality at a fundamental level where, by all means, bisexuality doesn't exist. And even if it does, you can't, like, you specifically can't be bisexual. And even if you were, you would promptly want to distance yourself from bisexuality because of how profoundly undesirable it is.
Which we both know is bullshit.
It is.
Because being bisexual is great. Being a bi plus person brings me so much joy. But because there are folks out there who think we are bullshit, it's that much more important to be out. So sometimes when I tell people I'm bisexual, I tell them I'm aggressively bisexual because it feels like I have this need to be extra out on behalf of those who can't be themselves or who have internalized biphobia to the point that they don't even see bisexuality as an option. I was going through an interview I did recently with a bi man who thought for the longest time that he was gay because he liked men, but then he realized he thought women were more than friends. They were more than just, oh, she's aesthetically attractive. And he had this entire crisis of faith in himself because he didn't realize bi was an option. This person is younger than I am. You know, I'm 30 and I'm talking to 20-year-olds who don't know that being bi is a choice. So to combat this erasure and this invisibility, to let others know that, yes, there's another more interesting third thing you can be, it's important to come out. And we spoke about this a little bit in our last episode. Coming out is always a political action because you are actively challenging other people's binary perceptions of you and others. Coming out is important to ensure we remain visible. And on the flip side, I know that it is exhausting to come out again and again and again. And because of that, we figured out these ways to identify each other, which we call biculture or signaling. And we are definitely going to talk about signaling because apparently lemon bars are bisexual and I don't know where that came from. Now we are going to talk more about signaling. But before we do that, what does it mean to be visible?
You know, to me, being visible means feeling seen. And I think that there are a lot of complicated meanings to that feeling and ways to get to it and different ways that we experience it. The most recognizable one, I think, is seeing my experiences reflected in the media. It's such a wholesome moment to know that this character I see myself in is bisexual. It's so wholesome to see a bisexual coming out story because, Jesus Christ, I get it. I get that struggle. But most of all, I think that what warms my heart the most is when my friends and allies do the work with me and alongside me. And sometimes it's really silly. I say something like, I'm so gay. And my sister will say, well, you're bi though. That's why you do it just a little bit differently. And other times it's with colleagues where they'll say, I can't speak to that experience, but Lynn is bi and they can share a bit more about their thoughts. And I think that to me, being visible and that experience of being seen means being referenced as the bi person in the room and acknowledging that I do hold that authority.
Yeah, I'm an expert bisexual at this point.
I love that. I'm an expert bisexual. I want a sticker.
I'm an expert bisexual. But you and I both know that with that outness, with that visibility, there's so much work and it is exhausting and tiring. How do you ensure that you remain visible?
Well, I think that for starters, I come out literally all the time. I mean, I don't know if that's really the appropriate way to say it because I've turned bisexuality into my career at this point. So Besides that obvious caveat, I think I've come up with pretty creative strategies to remain visible in my day-to-day life. I have this black pair of Timberland boots that I got in the city, and I bought some By Flag laces from Robin. So now I tie them up with that, and that's a lot of fun, and I feel really, really bi doing it. So I'm not great at letting others know that I'm bisexual without talking, but I do think that the laces do a pretty good job on their own. And whenever I'm at a multi-day event, I'm at a conference or something of the sort, I make sure to wear purple on all the days, partly so that I'm easily identifiable in a more subtle way. And also, of course, like, because bisexuals are obsessed with purple. You can't tell me otherwise. I'm a purple person. And I'm very much a bisexual killjoy. I will bring up bisexuality because it is always relevant.
Yeah. And I think for me, in a similar fashion, I do bi signaling in queer spaces more often than I do in straight spaces. When I go to queer spaces, I make certain to wear purple or to wear a bi shirt or to have a flag or to have a sticker or something because I don't want to get erased in a queer space. You know, when I'm out in my straight life, I don't even know if I like that. When I'm like not in a queer...
He's living a double life.
I'm in a liminal space, Lynn. When I'm not in queer spaces, like specifically for queer events, I am wearing black, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think something about me is queer. I don't know if it's my bangs. I don't know if it's the way I laugh. Something about me is queer. So when people find out I'm bi, they're not surprised. They're not like, oh, her? They're like, that checks out. Although, honestly, they probably think my husband is queerer than I am, which that's, you know, you clocked both of us. So what are you going to do about that?
I love that.
But I do come out as bisexual a lot, probably more often than is appropriate for the situation. When people are going around like, oh, I'm so-and-so. These are my pronouns and I'm reading this book right now. I will always bring up a bisexual book, even if I'm not reading it. I'll like bring up a memoir or I'll talk about a TV show that I'm watching. I will bring bisexuality into the space and be really, really annoying about it.
Oh, okay. But as a parenthesis here, that is such a great strategy to be a bisexual killjoy. So to all of our listeners, tips on being a bisexual killjoy from Bailey. Whenever you have to introduce yourself in a circle, make sure to bring up bisexuality, a bisexual book, like do the thing.
Yeah. I just tell people like, oh, I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3 right now, which I've talked about before on the podcast. But I'm like, I just love how pansexual everybody is. Don't you?
Because you should.
Yeah, you should.
So tell me, Bailey, how does that visibility relate to signaling?
Okay, so something that we really need to talk about as bisexuals because we get erased in queer spaces is signaling, because signaling lets other people know that we're part of a group. We're in on the secret. It's largely this cultural thing, depending on the niche or community you find yourself in. Signaling, like handkerchief culture in New York in queer spaces, was a way to tell people what you were into or what you were looking for without saying a word. It's a way to let other people know who you are in a safe fashion, because if you're in that community and I'm in that community, I can come out to you silently. And I will say bisexual people are pretty notoriously bad at identifying other bisexuals, even though we tend to cluster, which means that if you're in a room of people who just like, oh, yeah, we just clicked and we got each other. Inevitably, when you bring up your sexuality, 5 out of those 6 people are queer or bisexual. And you're like, huh.
Yeah.
And it's like the survival mechanism. So the way we signal each other tends to be incredibly overt or not at all subtle, right? So in these interviews that I was conducting last year, people were telling me, oh, I've got a bisexual flag tattooed on my skin. I cuff my jeans. I wear flannel. I make lemon bars, which I still don't get. So if someone can explain the lemon bar origin story to me, I'd love to hear it. They come out. They're signaling to other people so that they are demonstrating in a queer space that I am queer and specifically I'm bisexual.
Yeah, being able to identify each other through signaling, however overt or covert it may be, is crucial to maintain visibility because it provides a sense of reassurance. It says, I'm not the only bi person in the room. It also communicates pride and joy in finding others like yourself. Most importantly, it makes it harder for monosexual people to erase us if we're hellbent on emphasizing our experience.
And we have to be hellbent to continue emphasizing our experience. And as we move forward as a group of folks who I hope will continue to find each other in bigger, bigger batches, we've got to be creative to be visible. Personally, my idea of creativity is getting a shirt that says Jesus Christ is bisexual on it and to wear it on Easter. But like, you might get into a fight with somebody.
Okay, I'm into it though. That sounds fun.
And maybe that is you dyed your hair purple, you are wearing your purple shoes, you're wearing your combat boots. Or just get a pin, just get a nice little flag pin, a bi flag pin. You want to go more subtle? I've got a cute little raccoon that's holding a bisexual flag. And if you look closely, you can tell that I'm bi. Even the Boston Public Library has pride pins, and they have a bi pride pin that says Boston Public Library on it. And when you move to Boston, Lynn, you can get one too.
God. Okay, I need one. I love that. And I think that we signal in all of these different creative ways. When I was running my focus groups, a lot of people, like I'm pretty sure in all of my focus groups, it came up that we were all beverage goblins. We all had so many different water bottles and cups and all of them filled with stickers. The BRC's B sticker, like buy a B sticker, came up more than once. And that was really nice and really sweet. And it makes me feel like we do find ourselves in community and we want to make efforts to create that and to cluster in ways that are intentional. And not to present a false dichotomy here, because we all know we're a little allergic to those, just a bit. But as we talk about visibility, I want to pose an alternative, recognition.
And what is the difference?
Well, visibility has to do with being seen. Am I occupying a space and time, or am I an essence? Am I a ghost, a spirit?
I am.
I mean, I might be. But in order for something to be visible, it must be in your line of sight. And usually, typically, it's corporeal. Recognition does not have the same constraints as visibility. To recognize something is to summon your own knowledge from within and identify how it's taking place now. To recognize something is to know that it exists and has validity regardless of its ability to be seen at any given moment in time.
But what does it look like?
Well, there's the obvious. Mentioning bisexuality in discussions of hetero, homosexuality, explicitly mentioning bisexual people in LGBT meetings and discussions, asking what we are doing to take care of our bisexual friends, family members, colleagues, bringing it up is crucial in the process of recognition. Because if we're doing LGBT and activist work, then that means explicitly saying, what are we doing to take care of a fellow bisexual members and friends and colleagues?
And on the more subtle side of that, we have media representation highlighting bisexual characters, whether they've explicitly come out or not. I think one of the best ways that I've seen this done, and there are a lot of bad ways that bisexuals have been represented on screen, right? But in Schitt's Creek, one of the main characters, David, comes out to his friend as Pan by using this really good wine metaphor. He picks up a bottle of wine and his friend Stevie is like, oh, I didn't realize that you liked red wine or white wine. And he's like, oh, yeah, I like red wine and I like white wine. And I've been known to have the occasional rosé. I like the wine and not the label. And this is him without saying I am pansexual or I am bisexual. He's totally represented and firmly established himself as just a darling of the bi plus community. And I would love, love, love to have more of those moments in media, because David is an incredibly complex character who learns to be less selfish, and his sexuality is not the focus of his character. He gets to be a person who happens to also be queer, and I would love to see more of that in media.
Yeah. I do love that. I wonder, you know, I also don't understand the lemon bar thing. I've never been a lemon bar person, but I'm thinking about the show that I really like, Lucifer, and how one of the main characters' favorite sweet treat is a lemon bar. And I'm wondering if that was a covert thing. I don't know.
Oh.
It's tangential. Anyhow. I'm not here to say that awareness or representation in the media is not needed. It definitely is. And it is amazing that we're getting more realistic representation in media. But it's also long past due for us to move from awareness and being aware of bisexuality into an action-driven space.
And what does that look like to you?
You know, in awareness, to have the information does not mean that there is action upon that information. Too often, I see that the goal of any given talk, lecture, workshop is to raise awareness about something. However, awareness struggles with the same limitations visibility does. If someone is not actively reminded of the information they now have at their disposal, it sits in the back of their minds, neglected usually. Mm. Taking action is about actively having that information live in your head and actively doing the work of allyship, the hard steps.
Yeah, I mean, you can be aware of bisexual health disparities, but it's not doing anything until you choose to take action on it. Are you getting bi-specific resources to your local LGBT plus centers? Are you checking in with your bisexual friends, encouraging them to take care of themselves? Are you listening to bisexual organizations that are asking for community support? And in this way, awareness and action, like action is money. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about action really, it's dollars and cents.
It reminds me of this really short story when I was giving that lecture on bisexuality in the intro to LGBT studies class. I asked my students, hey, you know, what are some ideas to take action? And at some moment in time, someone was like, well, what if you just do what they say? And I'm like, yeah, you know, we have.
Concept.
We have all of these different organizations. We're putting in all of the work and we're telling you exactly what we want. Mm-hmm. And you're acting as if it's a mystery.
What do they need? Money.
It's like, you know, what do women want? Well, I'm pretty sure we want pockets and dresses. That's the key thing for the most part. Yeah. And in that very same way, it's like, what do bisexuals want? I'm pretty sure we want more bi stuff. We've said.
Yeah, we've said, and we told you what's wrong and you're not listening. You know, earlier this week, you and I were texting back and forth and you brought up this concept of spending your privilege. And thank you so much for bringing these really great ideas to the front of my mind. I love the idea of privilege being in an account and you can use a debit card and like spend your privilege. And everyone's got varying levels of privilege, right? Some people have more, some people have less. And as a white cisgender woman, I understand that I have privilege and that in a way I got to spend my money. I got to take my friends out to lunch. I got to make sure like, oh, baby, do you need a drink? Do you need a coffee? Like I got it. And spend my privilege in that way, in the metaphor being here, helping organize and making resources and just spreading the word. But that taking action in a sense is spending your currency as you can. For some of us, that privilege spending is coming out on behalf of others. For some, that means volunteering your time. For others, that means literally donating money to bi-specific organizations. And the more I thought about spending your privilege, Lynn, the more I thought about Dr. Joya Mukherjee, who is the head medical officer for Partners in Health, and they do incredible work around the world. And I went to her house once for an end-of-the-year picnic for all of her global health delivery students, and we were talking about this. Some people have more privilege to go into the field and help people get better or build hospitals. And she said, and sometimes all you have to give is your house. Sometimes all you have is to give a room in your house and not charge rent. And I'm like, oh, so your privilege and what you give depends on what you have. But even if you don't have a lot, you should do something. And it's up to you to decide what that something is. And I know not everyone will agree with that. And that's okay, because you're allowed to disagree with me. But when we're thinking about movements and liberation, I want our allies to know that we see and appreciate you when you listen to us. But also, like, you're doing your best. But for those allies who are listening, we do have homework for you, because the dismantling of bisexual erasure and the push for bisexual recognition is net good for everybody. And there are several things that you can do that actually don't take too much of your time and resources.
First step, call out biphobia. And it doesn't need to be the biggest overt thing in the world, but being able to reach out to the same people that are in your same demographic and category that share that same privilege is very impactful to say, hey, you know, bi people exist. I want to mention that first episode in Heartstopper, where just very casually the main character goes, bi people exist, you know. Mm. That really moved me.
So simple.
Yeah.
Stand up for bisexual people. If you're in a room mm-hmm. and you are not necessarily in a room with other bisexuals, maybe you're straight, and someone starts shitting on bisexual folks, I'm like, oh yeah, she's a bisexual. So you know what that means. Tell me, Barbara, what does that mean? Oh, you can't think of anything, Barbara? Sorry, this sounds like really specific. For any Barbaras listening right now, I'm sorry, unless you are being biphobic behind closed doors, in which case I'll double down. So stand up for your bisexual people, whether or not we're in the room.
And ensure that you're a safe person to come out to. Ensure that you present yourself as someone who, hey, a fellow bisexual person who's recently discovering this part of themselves can share that with you and can count on you to be a strong ally who will fiercely defend them.
You can also brainstorm ways in which you can be of support to your fellow bi plus friends and colleagues. It's okay if you don't know how to stand up for us or stand beside us. We're more than happy to have that conversation. And just like Lynn said, do what we ask you to do. It means the world to us when you do take the time and ask questions in which, you know, how can I spend my privilege? I've got this debit card. What can I get for you?
For our fellow bisexual cojoys who are listening in, if anyone ever asks if there is a bisexual agenda, tell them, yeah. Yeah, we do. Our demands. We want to be recognized as valid and get the resources that we need to keep our community safe and keep each other healthy. Now, here's what you need to do to push that agenda.
First and foremost, make sure that you are safe. We want to recognize that it is a privilege to feel safe enough to come out, to be safe enough to come out. So as you do this work, as you think about being a bisexual killjoy, nothing matters more than your safety.
Step two, once you're safe, question the underlying assumptions. Ask the question. And again, we can do this in subtle ways. When I told my boss, kind of like, hey, you know, bisexual people were there too. And questioning that base understanding of what we think sexuality is, what we think the way that desire is experienced, is incredibly powerful. And it's key and staple in your own bisexual killjoyness.
And you are allowed to bring in your bisexuality. Number three, our bisexuality informs more than just desire. I know it's got sex in the word, but it's so much more than that. Bisexuality informs the way we approach the world, our relationships, our jobs, our projects. If you can, summon the courage not just to mention, but highlight front and center the ways your bisexuality makes you a better artist, writer, scholar, student, professional, parent, whatever it is. And, you know, say it with your whole chest.
Remember that you are not ruining the discussion, conversation, or vibe by bringing in your bisexuality. You are being an activist, and we are so proud of you.
You know, bisexual killjoy, it's tongue-in-cheek for us. We don't actually think we're being bummers by being bisexual or talking about bisexuality. And I wish more people understood that, especially for our LGBTQ plus groups that are listening in, any reps from those. Personally, I think the most immediate place for changes to happen is in not the bisexual specific groups, obviously, but like LGBT plus. To our organizing friends, you have a responsibility to take care of all of your members. And there are a lot of different ways that you can do this. Number one,
ensure that you're making and holding space for your bi plus members. Are there bi plus specific events? What are we doing to make sure that your bi plus members are actively being taken care of inside your org?
To add to that, make sure that your bi members in leadership positions, which there should be, are being listened to, and you're not just catering to gay and lesbian specific events, workshops, and information sessions.
Precisely. It is crucial that we have bi plus people in leadership positions because we provide a unique perspective that is invaluable to the growth and longevity of any and all LGBT organizations.
So look at your boards. How bisexual are your boards? In summation, as we look back on this, we understand that it is far beyond time to have more than just visibility. I don't want a bisexual superhero. You know, I want healthcare. I want to make sure that bi plus people have coverage. We're talking about queer liberation. We're talking about bisexual liberation, which adds to queer liberation. And that recognition is going to raise all boats. It's not a bad thing to focus on one specific part of the alphabet. So whether you are an ally, a bi plus person, a person within a community, if you are on a leadership team for an LGBTQ plus organization, there are so many ways that you can lift up bi plus voices. And if you ever have any questions about how to do that, like, we're here as a resource. We are two bi plus people. The way we swipe our privileged card, our debit card every week or every day is to help educate. That's where we find satisfaction in our activism. So thank you so much for tuning into Bisexual Killjoy, where we do know that bisexuality really isn't a phase. It is a phenomenon. We are excited for the rest of the season. Releases will be out every other Wednesday throughout June. To support our work, follow us on Instagram, rate our podcast, preferably 5 stars, so more people can find us. And we do want to hear from you. We want your stories. We want your perspectives. You can hit us up on Instagram. You can email us at bisexualkilljoy@gmail.com. Until then, keep being a bisexual killjoy.
Stay bisexual and stay strong.